Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excuse for business, 1, Nolan.
The flag salute will be led by Representative Suzanne Bonamici. By Representative Betty Comp.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony will be a moment of silence. Courtesies. Well, I would like to, colleagues, I would like to ask you to join me in welcoming a very special set of third graders from Jefferson Elementary School in Corvallis up in the side gallery. This is Mrs. Pullum's third grade class. I happen to know that it's also Charlotte's ninth birthday today, and my daughter Ellie is also a member of this class, and they've just taken their trip up to the tower where it's beautiful. So, colleagues, please join me in welcoming Mrs. Pullum's class to the Capitol today. Welcome to the Capitol. Are there further courtesies? Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This must be our two districts together because all of our schools are here. Colleagues, I'd like to call your attention up in the gallery, too, to Harrisburg Elementary School's fifth grade class. Thank you.
Further courtesies? Seeing none, messages from the governor.
Madam Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform you that he's approved to sign the following bills. House Bills 2080, 2086, 2088, 2090, 2098, 2099, 2100, 2102, 2116, 2119, 2133, 2138, 2176, 2188, 2238, 2264, 2273, 2275, 2293, 2300, 2309, 2314, 2371, 2468, 2520, 2630, 2633, 2700, 2751, 2742, 2925, 2973, 3043, 5014, 5040, and 2823.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Let's back up just a little bit. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed House Bills 2134, 3026, 2175, 2258, 2261, 2382, 2390, 2456. Passed the following House bills as amended by the Senate. House Bill 2213, 2223, 2342. Concurred in House amendments and readopted SJM 12. Concurred in House amendments and repassed Senate Bill 479. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate that this President has signed Senate Bills 100, 135, 139, 167, 169, 198, 273, 384, 433, 466, 42, 501, 543, 563, 568, 613, 676, 806, 894, 1041, SCR 10, and SJM 13. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform that he has signed Senate Bills 707 and 838.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report files have been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move House Bill 2827 be withdrawn from the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Beyer moves that House Bill 2827 be withdrawn from the Committee on Ways and Means. Mason, Section 491, Subparagraph 4, says it is not in order to discuss the merits of a bill upon a motion to withdraw from committee. Debate must be confined strictly to the purpose of the motion, for if it were not true, the merits of any question could be forced under discussion merely by such a motion to withdraw. Colleagues, it is a little bit noisy here on the floor. Please take your conversations outside. Representative Beyer, to your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2827 allows ODOT to begin preparations for complying with the Federal Real ID Act. The Federal Department of Homeland Security has issued some rough guidelines on how we are to proceed, and in those guidelines are benchmarks that we need to meet. The bill authorizes Oregon Department of Transportation, in compliance with the Federal Real ID Act, to file for an extension, to submit implementation plans to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and enter into any agreement with a federal agency, agency of another state, or the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators necessary to comply with these provisions. As we enter the last month of this legislative session, we have precious little time remaining to deal with an issue that will affect millions of Oregonians. The clock is running out. Our colleagues in the Senate have passed a bill that is diametrically opposed to House Bill 2827. And because we need their agreement to advance this bill to the floor of the House, it appears that we may not get to consider the bill during this session if we rely on the Ways and Means Committee to report it out. It would be negligent of us as legislators not to consider a bill to bring Oregon in line with that federal law. In recognition of the importance of this bill to all Oregonians...
Representative, pause just a moment. It is appropriate to describe the contents of a measure. However, it is inappropriate to proceed, to go beyond the content, to advocate for why that content is needed. That would be to the merits of the bill.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Speaker.
You.
We must recognize that time is running short and the time to act on this bill is now. I urge your support for this measure.
Further discussion? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thoroughly support this motion. The time is right for this motion. I just wish I'd known about it because I could have informed the nice anonymous person who left a nice automated message on my phone last night and around my district. I could have informed them of this wonderful piece of legislation. Thank you.
Again, discussion is to the motion, not to the bill. Representative, further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion.
To the motion.
I think that it's a unique approach for the majority party to say, let's pull a bill to the committee, from the committee to the floor, when the committee could have just sent it to the floor, but I certainly don't object.
Further discussion of the motion, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We request that the unanimous consent be granted that we have a Republican caucus for under an hour and 45 minutes in length.
Representative Scott, can you state a specific time that you're requesting?
Specific is difficult, but it should not take more than a half hour.
Representative Scott moves that we stand in recess for 60 minutes. Half an hour. Representative Hunt, do you have a motion as well? He does not. Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, we stand in recess for 30 minutes. Clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barker Barnhart. Berger. Berger Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boone Boquist. Boquist Bruin. Bruin Buckley. Burley. Burley Butler. Butler Cameron. Cameron Cannon. Clem. Clem Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Dingfelder Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Flores, Flores Galizio, Gerard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Greenlick Hannah, Holvey, Holvey Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nathanson Nelson, Nelson Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Roblin Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Tomei Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Berger, Boquist, Cameron, Clem, Dingfelder, Greenlick, Holvey, Nelson, excuse for business, one, Nathanson.
We have a quorum. Representative Nolan, for what purpose do you rise?
I want to speak to the motion when we're there.
Okay. We'll hold that for a moment. When we recess, we were under propositions and motions, and before us is the motion to withdraw House Bill 2827 from the Committee on Ways and Means. Further discussion of the motion, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since this bill currently resides in the committee that I co-chair on behalf of the House, I wanted to let the body know that this bill has been on a list of bills that I have requested movement through that committee. But since it is a joint committee, I am not able on my own authority to make that happen. The Senate has already had a chance on its floor to debate its version of a response for this issue, and I will support the House's effort to have a debate on this floor on its version of this issue.
Further discussion of the motion, Representative Crummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm wondering is, if I can ask.
Speaking to the motion,
no, can I ask a question of the as a mover of the motion?
Yes, indeed. And I will remind members: if you rise to ask a question, please start by asking the carrier to yield, and that way we won't start the clock on a debate clock. So Representative Crummel asks Representative Beyer to yield to a question. Representative Beyer, do you yield?
I do.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. I'm just wondering if we, kind of following up on the previous speaker's comments, do we have an idea or has there been any indication from legislative fiscal what the fiscal impact of this bill is?
The report will be brought down at the time the motion is being considered on the floor.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm done.
You're welcome. Is there further discussion? Representative Beyer, do you wish to close on your motion?
Thank you. Okay.
Representative Beyer, hold for just a moment. Representative Scott, did you wish to speak to the motion?
I do. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does Carrie yield?
Yes.
She does.
Thank you. You please explain to the body how implementing the Real ID Act can be accomplished if we, in Section 2, Line 9, are also filing for an extension.
Representative, hold just a moment. Representative, to ask a question about the content of the measure would be inappropriate under the rules guidelines. You can ask about questions related to why it's important to bring this forward or in that context.
Okay. Thank you.
Once this motion passes, you could ask a question about the content. If this motion passes, yes. Thank you. Is there further discussion of the motion? Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Yes.
Question of the carrier. Does Carrie yield?
Yes.
She does.
Thank you. I am anxious to know, and perhaps you could just kind of fill us in a little bit on the thinking here on this motion to withdraw House Bill 2827. When a couple of days ago, this very week, we asked to have a bill, House Bill 3554, pulled forward in regard to a vote on real ID. So I'm just questioning what the urgency is to do this now.
Representative, I'm told it's appropriate to ask about the urgency of the measure, because that is effective why withdraw it currently, but not to compare it to a separate measure, which is a different motion.
We'll reframe my question in the context of voting on real ID and the urgency to vote on this particular motion at this point. Could you give us some further clarification, please?
Thank you. Yes. This bill was debated in Transportation Committee, has ended up in Ways and Means, where we're finding it difficult to get it out, and the session is moving on, and we want to be able to have the chance to have the discussion and the vote on this bill before session ends.
Further question?
Additional question to the carrier. Do you yield?
Yes.
Thank you. And not to compare this to any other bill, but specifically on this issue, what has changed in 2 days to have this urgent vote on Real ID today?
Well, we're 2 days further into the session, and we need to vote and have the discussion before session ends.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Welcome. Representative Wisnett.
Your question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does Carrie yield?
Yes.
She does.
Good representative from Springfield, did you write the chairman of that committee and request a hearing on this bill?
I have orally asked for a hearing on this bill.
Clarification, Mr. Speaker.
Clarification, does Carrie yield?
Yes.
She does.
So you did not write a letter to the chairman of this committee requesting a hearing?
I did not write a letter requesting a hearing.
Thank you.
Representative Byer, do you wish to close on your motion?
Just to say that we must recognize that the session is starting to wind down, and if we want to have a discussion and a vote on this bill, we need to start moving, and that's why I'm making the motion today. Thank you, and I urge your support.
Those are the opinion that House Bill 28... Representative Scott asked for a call of the House. He is joined by Representative Dallin, Representative Maurer, Representative Crummell, Representative Thatcher, and Representative Flores. Doorkeepers bar the doors. Sergeant Arms at 10, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Byer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick,
Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Dingfelder, Gerard.
Colleagues, let's come back to order. All members are present. Representative Wisnet, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I kindly request an all vote call, please. Need five people.
Representative Wisnet requests an oral roll call. He is joined in that request by Representative Flores, Representative Thatcher, Representative Crummel, Representative Burley, and Representative Wisnet, I believe, had his arm up. Those are the opinion that House Bill 2827, colleagues, can we have your attention? Make sure everyone recognizes the motion we're on here. Those are the opinion that House Bill 2827 should be withdrawn from committee on Ways and Means will vote aye when called upon. Those opposed will vote no, and the clerk will call the roll alphabetically. Barker.
Yes.
Barnhart.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Beyer.
Aye.
Bonamici.
Aye.
Boone.
Aye.
Boquist.
Aye.
Bruin.
Aye.
Buckley.
Aye.
Burley.
Aye.
Butler.
Yes.
Cameron. Cannon.
No.
Clem.
Aye.
Cowan.
Aye.
Dallum.
Aye.
Dingfelder.
Aye.
Chris Edwards.
Aye.
David Edwards.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Flores.
Aye.
Galizio.
Aye.
Gerard.
Aye.
Gelzer.
Aye.
Gilliam. Gilman.
Aye.
Gerard.
Aye.
Greenlick.
Aye.
Hannah.
Aye.
Holvey. Holvey.
Yes.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
Comp.
Aye.
Kotek.
Aye.
Krieger.
Aye.
Crummel.
Aye.
Lim.
Aye.
McPherson.
Aye.
Maurer. Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin,
Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker,
aye.
Voting no, Cannon, Nelson, Greg Smith.
Representative Nelson, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to change my vote from nay to aye, please.
Representative Nelson changes her vote from nay to aye. Representative Chris Edwards, for what purpose do you rise? The vote is 58 ayes, 2 nay, and the motion is adopted. Representative Chris Edwards.
Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended for immediate second and third reading of House Bill 2827, and the bill be made a special order of business at 11:30 a.m. today.
Representative Chris Edwards requests unanimous consent the rules be suspended for your immediate second and third reading of House Bill 2827 and the bill be made a special order of business at 11:30 a.m. today. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Colleagues, between now and 11:30, I encourage you to have your staff members bring you your bill folder, if you would consider that useful. Also, between now and then, the clerk staff will be distributing the fiscal and the revenue related to this bill and impact statements. All right. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 5003 relating to financial administration of the State Department of Agriculture and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3265 relating to public borrowing and appropriated money.
Bills read a second time or passed the third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk, read the bill in summary.
Senate Bill 544 relating to Department of State Lands and declaring an emergency directs Department of State Lands to investigate feasibility of establishing certification program for professional wetland scientists and to submit report for recommendations for legislation to the 75th Legislative Assembly.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 544B. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Representative Riley. Representative Riley is off the floor. Representative Greenlick votes aye. Representative Crummel, how do you vote? Representative Crummel. Representative Crummel is off the floor. Senate Bill 544B, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk, read the bill.
House Bill 3455, related to urban renewal and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3455A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3455 comes to you from the Revenue Committee with a unanimous due pass. It is a cleanup bill which proposes a technical change to our urban renewal statutes. During the 2001 legislative session, we passed a bill that provided that some existing urban renewal plans and plans adopted after October 6, 2001 would no longer divide new local option taxes, but that all other types of plans would continue to do so. Plans that no longer divide new local option taxes are called reduced rate plans, and other types of plans that continue to divide local option taxes are called standard rate plans. In 2005, the City of Keyser substantially amended their urban renewal plan. When the city took this action, it changed from a reduced rate plan to a standard rate plan and began dividing the taxes that were raised by the Keyser Rural Fire Protection District's recently approved local option levy. This was not the intent of the 2001 legislation. House Bill 3455 rectifies the situation by stating that if an urban renewal plan is a reduced rate plan before it is substantially amended, it remains a reduced rate plan, thereby not affecting local option levies approved by voters in other taxing jurisdictions. It's a good bill. I recommend an aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I just thought it, to the bill.
To the bill.
I add a couple comments. This involved Keyser. It's just, it is a technical fix. Keyser completed a major amendment to the urban renewal district last year, and in so doing, Keyser became a different kind of urban renewal district, and they weren't able to exempt out special levies, which resulted in a loss of $200,000 to $300,000 to the Keyser Fire District. The city didn't anticipate this or account for it, and the county assessor had no choice to apply this ruling, which was a surprise to both the City of Keyser and the Keyser Fire District. So this bill fixes that technicality, and I do urge your aye vote. Thanks.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close? She does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. House Bill 3455A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill. Representative Kremel, were you on the floor during the 30 seconds?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I was on the floor.
Great.
And I apologize that I did not push my button, but I'm an aye vote. I don't know if it can be recorded or not. If it can, terrific. If not,
it is required to be recorded by the rule, and so we will record it as a yes vote.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
You're welcome. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3555, relating to shaken baby syndrome and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 3555A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Request permission to use a visual aid, please.
Representative Gelser asks for permission to use a visual aid. Is there an objection? Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today we have a bill about a very important topic that stems from a question that I'm sure that the representative from the center of Portland will soon be asking within a couple of weeks. How can something this small create such a level of stress within your body? I have four children, and as I was thinking about preparing to carry this bill today, I thought back to the good representative from the land of Christmas trees talked about some of the high points of his life on the floor here, and I thought back to one of the low points of my life as a mother. I was pregnant with my fourth child. I had a very colicky three-week-old. I was sick. I was in the bathroom. I had the screaming infant in the carrier next to me, while on the outside of the door, my just-turned two-year-old was knocking, saying she didn't like it when I was getting sick, and my just-turned five-year-old was asking for a cup of juice. And as I sat in that bathroom, I thought, I'm not ready to be a mother. When I told my husband that later that night, he said it was a little late to be thinking of that. And I'm very glad to be a mother. And I'm very fortunate that I have a husband that supports me and family members that can come and help in that moment when caring for an infant comes to that point where you are so exhausted, you haven't slept, and you need a chance to rest. Unfortunately, not every parent has that available to them, and not every parent understands the physiology of a child and how very easy it is in a moment of anger or frustration to cause injury to a child that could cause that child's death or permanent disability. This bill is about creating a statewide hospital-based program to help families understand how to prevent shaken baby syndrome. Let me share with you some of the information that was shared with the Elections, Ethics, and Rules Committee just several weeks ago. We had a neurosurgeon, Dr. Monica Webby, from Emanuel Hospital up in Portland, who came and talked about one of the problems with this syndrome is that often the parents who inflict these injuries are not people that would ever think of harming their child. They simply do not understand how easy it is to inflict this injury. I'm going to apologize as I use this doll to explain to you, and I thank my daughter for lending her baby to me. She's an infant today, but Maya wanted me to point out that Kyla here is actually 2 years old. But for the purposes of this debate, she is an infant. Many people, if they think about shaking a baby, they think about a vigorous, that kind of a shaking, and they think, I would never do that. But did you know that picking up an infant in the middle of the night when they've been crying and just doing this, please just stop, could inflict an injury that could kill your child. Please just stop. Never shake a baby. Not even like that. Parents need to know this. The best place to teach them and to show them is in the hospital, where we can help them to understand that there are going to be times in that infant's life that despite the tremendous love they have for that baby, devotion that they have for that baby, they're going to be exhausted and exasperated, and that that's normal. That's okay. All of us that have had children have felt that. They need to know that it's okay to take the baby, lay the baby down in the bed, in the crib, not in a bed, in a crib with rails. It's okay to lay the baby down and leave the room. The baby will not harm itself by crying. The neurosurgeon explained that when that parent does that, please just stop, they get this reinforcement because the baby does stop. So they think maybe that's what the baby needed. It's not a problem. They stopped crying when they did that. The neurosurgeon explained the reason that they stop is because you've disrupted the breathing in the brain system in that child, the thinking system, and you've created little bits of brain damage in that child, and that's why it has stopped. This bill creates a task force that would bring together the Oregon Hospital and Health Systems. It would bring together physicians, pediatricians, and nurses to talk about how to make sure that every parent in Oregon, when they have a newborn child in the hospital, has the opportunity to learn the appropriate techniques for calming a crying baby, understanding the developmental needs of a baby, and understanding that it's never okay to shake a baby, which most people know, but understanding what that really means to shake a baby. Understanding that playing with your infant, your 3 or 4 month old, just playing, not a good idea, even when the baby's laughing and they're little. These are things that parents need to know. JCO has pointed out I'm quoting from an article from JCO, the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations. The temporal proximity to the child's birth, the relatively short period during which infants and children are at risk, and the preponderance of parent perpetrators afford unique opportunities to intervene through a program of hospital-based parent education administered at the time of the infant's birth. a coordinated hospital-based parent education program targeting parents of all newborn infants can significantly reduce the incidence of abusive head injuries and could save lives and the cost of caring for victims. In fact, the program that this group would work to implement statewide has been implemented in other states, and research has shown that in the states that have done this, a mandatory statewide hospital-based program, they have reduced their rate of shaken baby syndrome by half. Colleagues, by half. That saved lives, both in terms of children who will die and children who will become severely injured, and it's also a cost savings in hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of unreimbursed hospital costs. In this program that was tested, it required less than 5 minutes of contact time with the families in the hospital. It involved watching a video that reassured parents that it's normal for infants to cry, that explained what shaking really is, and shared some of the graphic and gruesome details of what happens inside of a small child's head when that shaking activity happens. The Elections, Ethics, and Rules Committee had the opportunity to view some MRI scans of children who had been shaken to watch how the brain continues to liquefy after these injuries. We all need to know these things. They're not pleasant to know about, but it's important for the safety of our children. This bill will allow the Hospital Association, who is supportive of the bill, to come on board and find a way to voluntarily implement this statewide so that we can make sure that it's happening in every hospital in a cost-effective way, in a way that's research-based, and it will give us the chance in the next legislative session to come back and evaluate the success at getting this program implemented at every hospital to see if there are further steps that we need to take to prevent these injuries to our children. Colleagues, I thank you for listening to this introduction of this bill, and I would just again remind all of us to remind those who are caring for children, it is never, ever okay to shake a baby, even just a little bit, even to say, just stop, because you don't want that baby to stop for that reason. Colleagues, this is a very good bill, and I hope that you will vote yes. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close? She does not. Those opinion that House Bill 3555A should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Representative Cannon votes aye. Representative Bonamici votes aye. Representative Esquivel votes aye. House Bill 3555A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials, and resolutions. Bills, reports, and business line on the table. First reading of Senate bills. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5505 relating to financial administration, the Department of Corrections, appropriated money, declared an emergency. Senate Bill 5535 relating to financial administration, the Public Defense Services Commission, appropriated money, declared an emergency. Senate Bill 5539 relating to financial administration of the Real Estate Agency and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 5540 relating to financial administration of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 5544 relating to financial administration of the Oregon Youth Authority, appropriated money, and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 119 relating to Attorney General enforcement of securities laws. Senate Bill 153 relating to health insurance and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 597 relating to adoption. Senate Bill 614 relating to public borrowing for health care facilities. Senate Bill 1044 relating to destination resorts.
Bills read a second time or passed to third reading? Third reading of Senate bills. Clerk, read the bill.
Senate Bill 176 relating to reorganized business entities and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 176. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 176 comes to you from the House Committee on Revenue, where it received unanimous support. 176 was requested by the Department of Revenue as a fix. The bill provides that when a business has an unpaid tax debt, the owners of the business cannot eliminate the tax debt by dissolving or and reorganizing into what is essentially the same business. Currently, the law provides for the transfer of certain types of unpaid tax liability when a business dissolves. For example, if an employer withholds taxes from an employee's paychecks and fails to pay those funds to the state, that debt may be transferred to one or more persons who are responsible for making sure the payments were made. Current law does not allow the same type of transfer of liability for other types of taxes, such as unpaid tobacco or transit taxes. The Department of Revenue has experienced several cases where businesses that were liable for unpaid tobacco tax dissolved and reappeared a short time later with the same assets and same owners, but a new business name. Senate Bill 176 provides that if the department determines that the business reorganized simply to avoid unpaid tax debt, then the tax debt would transfer to the new business. The department will consider the following points in making its determination: whether the business operates in the same physical location, provides the same product or service, or has one or more of the same directors or officers. This is a good bill, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those opinion that Senate Bill 176 should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greg Smith votes aye. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Representative Minnis votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Schaffler votes aye. Senate Bill 176, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
Senate Bill 215, relating to student admission and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 215A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I stand before you today and urge you to support Senate Bill 215. Here's what it does. It defines a person in parental relationship for the purpose of school district residency, and it modifies requirements for school admission of persons who are between the ages of 19 and 21. Let me explain why this is necessary. Having been a high school principal, we have some state and federal laws that require anyone who is in your district residing has to have the right to go to school. Many of our students these days, or some of our students these days, don't live with a parent. Some are coming to live with a grandparent. There are other ways if they parents will sign some paperwork and give legal status to a grandparent, they can then enroll them in that sense. But sometimes they come before any of the paperwork is done, and we still enroll them because that's our responsibility. But we recognize that the people who they are living with really do not have any legal status with respect to the child. We're enrolling because the law requires us to enroll. This gives us a new category of people, those who are the student is residing with, so that the district knows that's where the student is. But it also lets us remind ourselves that they really don't have any legal status with respect to that child. OSAA and all those other requirements have their own rules about residency. This does not change any of that. You still have to go through all those rules and regulations. It doesn't affect any of the other issues, but it gets the school district out of the issue when it's a divorce case and the student has gone and lived with someone while things are going on. At least we have a record of where they are residing at the time this is all going on. Important for a school district if they're trying to get a hold of a child. The other thing that it does is that the statutes clearly state that if a student is under the age of 21 years or younger, and they are a special needs child and they have not received their diploma, you have to allow them to be in school. It's required. The statute implies that any other person between the ages of 19 and 21 can go to school, and some districts believe that it is a must enroll that student if they haven't received their diploma. This clarifies that to say that between the ages of 19 and 21, a district may enroll a person who has not yet received their diploma. So it is a cleanup bill that helps school districts understand where the people who are residing in their districts are staying at the moment, and it does not give any other legal rights other than a right that the school district is already required to do, and that's enroll any student who is residing in their district to a free and public education. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Dellum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Probably one of the most difficult decisions that a school district faces when a student wants to transfer across school district lines is establishing a living relationship. This bill will clear that up and makes it possible for the school district to say to a student, do you have residency in the district? The student can truly respond, yes, I do. And tuition agreements become a lot easier. This is a very good bill and most helpful to districts. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For the discussion, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Absolutely.
He does.
Thank you, good representative. Was there discussion in your committee that individuals over 18 could get their education in community colleges rather than us mixing the 21-year-olds with 14-year-olds? That seems very dangerous.
We didn't have discussion about that. What we wanted to do is make sure that it was clear. The way the statute's written now, there is an implication that school districts have to enroll students that are over 19 before they're 21, because there is a complete requirement that if the student is in special needs, they have to allow it to 21. And the way the statute was written, it didn't. The implication was there that you had to do that for all students. This clarifies that to say it's really up to the school district to decide if they want to let them come in. Because I agree with you, there are cases when they shouldn't be they should be told that's the community college is there, and this gives that district the right to say that. We have had battles with people in the past that say the statutes are, say, 21 years old, and if you read the statute just before that one, it says a student must attend school if, and then it lists some things behind the if. And if you read those, it's really all about special education, but we have had some issues where students have said, no, those are some ifs, but I haven't got my diploma and I want to come. This one clarifies it and say the district doesn't have to. It's only a may.
A follow-up question, Mr. Speaker.
Follow-up question is Carrie Yield.
Yes,
he does.
So, good representative. So does the school district get the ADM, get that money for this student?
They have in the past, and they will continue to get money for those students up to 21.
Okay, thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I am certainly for education and feel the very critical importance of these young people knowing how to read and write and do math. But I really have a concern of 21-year-olds in our public schools in the same daily environment of 14, 15-year-olds. And I do hope in the future that this will be modified so with an exception for the special ed kids, but that students over 18 can get their education in community colleges. I hope that will be in the future statutes.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote?
Votes aye. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Butler, how do you vote? He votes aye. Senate Bill 215A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. We have arrived at the special order of business. The rules have been suspended for immediate second reading of House Bill 2827.
House Bill 2827, relating to Federal Real ID Act of 2005 and declaring an emergency.
The rules have also been suspended for immediate third reading of House Bill 2827. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2827, relating to Federal Real ID Act of 2005 and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2827. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2827 in A and Gross provides the statutory authority necessary to allow Oregon to begin the process of coming into compliance with requirements of the Federal Real ID Act. The Act, signed into law on May of 2005, gives states 3 years to meet minimum standards for issuing driver's licenses and identification cards. States may request an extension to December of 2009. If Oregon begins issuing Real ID compliant cards by January 1st of 2010, all state driver's licenses and identification cards will be accepted for federal purposes until May of 2013, when all cards issued, reissued, or renewed must be in full compliance. While there is no penalty to the state government for noncompliance, citizens will, and I must reinforce that, will be adversely affected if we don't pass this bill. Driver's licenses and ID cards from states not in compliance will not be accepted by federal agencies for official identification, such as security checks at airports and entry into federal buildings. So we must act on behalf of Oregonians. Without this bill, Oregon is stuck in a state of limbo. ODOT will not have the authority to begin complying with this new and complicated federal law, and Oregonians will not be secure in the knowledge that their state's IDs and driver's licenses will comply. The federal Real ID law is fraught with problems, but none of us is in a position today to tell the federal government that we will refuse to comply with their law. With HJM 11, we sent a message to Congress that they ought to do more to help us implement the law. But now is the time for us to take responsibility as state legislators. And I must point out, if you've seen the legislative fiscal on this one, it is high, and that was the reason that we did pass HJM 11, asking Congress to help pay for this. It is an expensive and unfunded mandate. We must uphold our oaths to the state and federal constitutions and abide by the directives that Congress has set down. The Real ID Act has several components and many logistical complications that go along with implementing those major provisions. It requires Oregon to remake its driver's licenses, which means that the restructuring of many of our computer databases and other systems. We must create an extensive new document storage system. It would require us to set up an interstate data sharing network, which would also require complex administrative, technical, and security measures. It includes a mandate that states verify the issuance, validity, and completeness of every birth certificate, immigration document, and any other document presented at DMV as a part of an application for a Real ID card. The cost of Real ID cannot be ignored. Along with buying and installing technology required for compliance, it would require us to expand our DMV payrolls. We will have to initiate or expand employee training in such areas as security, document verification, and immigration law, and initiate and expand security clearance procedures for ODOT workers. Published estimates are that it will cost more than $11 billion nationally to implement Real ID. The state of Washington recently found that it would cost them $251 million over 5 years to undertake this huge task. Money isn't the only problem here, however, and it isn't what makes this bill so urgent. In order for Oregon to qualify for the implementation extensions offered by the Federal Department of Homeland Security, we have to meet their established benchmarks. Otherwise, Oregonians will be left out in the cold. And to get that extension, we have to apply for it by October 1st of this year. Then 6 months later, next April, we have to submit a plan to the federal government to show that we are implementing this bill. If we don't get this done this session, we won't have a plan to show the feds next April. And so by May, Oregonians' driver's licenses will be useless for federal purposes. Oregon will continue to make our needs, concerns, and challenges known to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and to push for federal implementation funds. In the meantime, House Bill 2827A gives ODOT the authority necessary to apply for a compliance extension, to submit an implementation plan clearly identifying Oregon's needs for time, funding, system development, and safeguards, and to negotiate agreements with federal agencies, agencies of other states, or the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators to create a workable, secure system of identity verification. While this is not an ideal situation, it is for the benefit of all Oregonians. Colleagues, the time to act is now, and I urge adoption of House Bill 2827A.
Further discussion, Representative Chris Edwards. To the bill. To the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, yesterday I stood on this floor and said it is time for Oregon to be proactive about the problem of illegal immigration. Yesterday we took one little step in the right direction. Today we have another opportunity to take yet another important step. The reality is that comprehensive immigration reform cannot be successful without getting control of our porous borders. While border control is not the only challenge we face with regard to illegal immigration, the fact remains that sound border control must be part of any effective solution. Illegal immigration to the United States has grown 23% over the past 4 years. In spite of the creation of the Department of Homeland Security and increased funding for border control. We have an overwhelming problem on our hands, and something must be done. By and large, I think the federal government has failed. It's absolutely failed to do its job on immigration policy, and that has left states to deal with these tough issues, yet with few tools to do the job. But one thing the federal government has done is passed the Real ID Act. And now it is our responsibility to put Oregon on a path to compliance. 2 years have passed since the Real ID Act was enacted by Congress. Ladies and gentlemen, we can't brush this issue under the rug any longer. It is time to act. This bill will not solve all of our problems related to illegal immigration, not even close. But by passing this bill today, we can ensure that those who seek to come here illegally won't be enabled to stay in the shadows under the cover of an Oregon ID. We can make sure that those who are seeking ID in Oregon will have to prove that they have a legal presence here. That's the least we can do, and we ought to do it now. I urge your aye vote. Further discussion, Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Well, we've heard a lot of rhetoric about illegal immigration in the past several years and last several months. And at every single level of government, we've had a lot of talk, but little to no real action to match it. George Bush has talked tough on immigration, but he's done very little on something that is first and foremost a federal issue. That inaction has had a big impact on this state and certainly on my constituents. But if we take our cues from the Bush administration and we don't act now, that effect is about to get even bigger. In thinking about a vote on this bill today, colleagues, I think we need to ask ourselves the following question. What are the consequences if we do not act on this real ID bill today? If we don't act, then our constituents, legal citizens of this state, are going to be treated like suspects. Suspects unable to enter a federal building or fly on an airplane in their own country. Voting for this bill today will make sure that doesn't happen to legal residents of Oregon. Furthermore, it will prevent would-be terrorists from obtaining an Oregon driver's license and boarding a plane where they can cause harm to American citizens. We can no longer turn the other way as criminals take advantage of vulnerabilities in our system. This bill directly addresses one of those vulnerabilities, and I urge your aye vote.
Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
I rise in opposition to House Bill 2827. As I was sitting there thinking about why I oppose this bill, it took me back to the Constitution, the original framers of the Constitution, who framed a Constitution that talked about the relationships between the federal government and the state government. And when it went out for ratification in the state governments, they basically said, no, we're not going to ratify this thing until you put something into it that defines and limits the power of the federal government relative to individuals. And that led to the establishment of the Bill of Rights, which had such things in it that the federal government can't take away our right to bear arms, something many people in the chamber think matters. That we have historically, for the whole history of the United States, been suspicious of the federal government and trying to achieve the balance between the power of the federal government and the rights of individuals. When Lincoln took away the right to habeas corpus as a part of the hysteria around the Civil War, we stood by and went along with it for a while. When the federal government abducted thousands of Japanese Americans and took them off to a concentration camp, well, we were worried about those Japanese. We were at war with them. And we thought these citizens owning the grocery store and the farm down the street were dangerous, even though they were American citizens, born American citizens, and we round them up and took them to a concentration camp. Had real ID been enforced, it would have been a lot easier to find them. This way we had to rely on the fact that they looked differently than the majority, and we got away with it. But the next group we round up, whatever group that is, under whatever hysteria we have, will be harder to find. What real ID does, for those of you that love the federal government and aren't worried about their power, is it's the beginning of the establishment of a national ID card system. There are too many of my relatives that saw the power of the national ID system in Germany and in Hungary and in the Ukraine and in Poland in the early 1940s. Now, am I being paranoid? I find it weird when I join the ranks of the paranoid, but I also remember that sometimes the paranoid are persecuted. And this bill gives the federal government enormous power over individual citizens of the United States. I see those of us that believe in liberty, those of us that believe in freedom, those of us that believe in the rights of the citizen against the power of the federal government, need to say no. Need to stop this development of a national ID system, because it's one more tool that the wrong people in power in the federal government, and you can believe the wrong people belong to a party that starts with D, or the wrong people belong to a party that starts with R, or the wrong people that belong to some other party, the Whigs or the Bull Moots or anybody else. And this gives them the potential for extraordinary power and unbalances the relationship between the federal government and the United States. I urge you to look carefully not only at the words of the bill and not only at the cost of taking this step, but of the downstream consequences. Think like the founders of our government thought when they saw the unlimited power of the British government over them. Think about other things that have happened in our lifetime, at least in my lifetime, and before my lifetime, where the federal government abused that power and where we found ways to redress that balance. This Real ID Act swings the balance in exactly the wrong direction, and I urge you to vote no on this and to let us join other states that have said, hell no, we won't go in this direction. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do. Thank you, Representative. On the first page of the fiscal we were just handed this morning, on the very bottom line, it says, currently ODOT renews driver's licenses on an 8-year cycle, and the Real ID Act would require reissuing all state identification in a 4-year period. Is there anything in this bill that would address that requirement to go to a 4-year renewal?
Thank you, Representative. What they're referring to here is, as there is a 4-year period from the date that we are required to have compliant IDs until there is, now I have to get this right. There is a 4-year period where we have to bring all Oregon driver's license into compliance. It does not change our 8-year cycle that will continue on. But all driver's licenses, we have to turn them all over to compliant driver's licenses in that 4-year period.
Follow-up?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Just to clarify, so we will remain on an 8-year renewal for our driver's licenses, but we will require people to come back earlier to get it reissued because we're not going to go to a 4-year cycle and charge them less to get that 4-year license. Is that correct?
Yes, we're not changing the statutes on it, but we are required to bring everybody in compliance, and we are only going to have a 4-year period to do that.
Okay. Additional question?
Additional question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
Sorry. Carrier yields.
Okay, thank you. In House Bill 2827, it's silent on whether or not Oregon would adopt the driving certificate option, which is allowed under the Real ID Act. Is that something that is intended to be left out, or is it intended that Oregon would go forward with such a certificate, or what would be your answer to that?
The intent in House Bill 2827 is that Oregon move towards federal Real ID compliance, and that does include the driver's licenses, and that means that if to become Real ID compliant, sorry about this. That means that you are required to show proof of legal presence. It is silent on any others. That is an option that can be decided down the road. This bill just directs ODOT to start moving towards compliance.
Okay, thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. I appreciate those answers and clarifications. I just wanted to come... I'm sure you all know what illegal means. It means prohibited by law. And if an illegal alien is prohibited by law to take up residence here, then why would we as lawmakers encourage breaking the law even further by providing them documentation to drive in the state. And sometimes this documentation is referred to as a breeder document. It's something that opens the gates to a lot of other benefits that are out there. Because they're not supposed to be here in the first place. And according to ORS 162.325, Oregon is breaking its own law by allowing illegals driving privileges. This is not about being anti-immigration. It's about upholding the law and holding people to the same standard we as American citizens are held to. It's about making our country more secure. It's about helping us keep better track of who is here in the country. It's about complying with the Real ID Act and identifying who is here in this country. When a person is stopped by a police officer and found with a valid driver's license, they cannot further check on them and find out really who they are. If a person is stopped by a police officer and found with no valid license, they can take them in and fingerprint them and find out who they really are. And if they're wanted or if they're on a watch list, think about it. Had the 9/11 folks not had a driver's license, they would have been fingerprinted and found to be on a watch list, and further action could have been taken. Here's a quote from a former U.S. president. It says, I believe new immigrants are good for America, but mark my words, unless we handle this well, immigration of this sweep and scope can threaten our union. That, my friends, was a quote from former President Bill Clinton. He said that in 1998 during a commencement address at Portland State University. Now, normally I wouldn't take to quoting President Clinton, but I just wanted to illustrate that this is not just a conservative right-wing issue. Ever since September 11th, strengthening the security of the state-issued driver's license and identity card has become an important public policy issue. It's no secret that all the terrorists involved that day had valid Social Security numbers and a valid driver's license. These are the two most important pieces of documentation and identification you can get in the U.S. They help you get work, obtain credit, rent an apartment, and so on. They also help you with other things like enrolling in flight school and boarding an airplane. We live in a fast-paced world, which means we must have a system to distinguish between those here who are here as lawful members of our society and those who are just visiting or those who are here illegally. There are several reasons that this is a good bill to pass. It's not as strong as I would like, but it certainly sets us in the right direction. It is permissive because it says it's important in the, this is the fiscal statement on the second page. It says it's important to note that the bill allows ODOT to take steps necessary to be in compliance with the requirements of the Real ID Act, but does not explicitly grant ODOT the authority to require proof of legal presence, and it is silent on the policy choices associated with rolling out the provisions of the Real ID Act on a statewide scale. Like I said, it's permissive, but it does get us going down the right path and does send a better message than what I believe we sent with HJM 11. We're talking about national security here. The recent plot to attach Fort Dix, New Jersey, to attack Fort Dix, New Jersey by six Islamic militants, three were illegal immigrants. In the 9/11 attack, 18 of the 19 terrorists had some form of U.S. identification, many of them driver's licenses. The 9/11 Commission found that we were vulnerable at our points of entry, such as boarding aircraft, and the Commission urged the federal government to set standards for the issuance of sources of identification, such as driver's licenses. Our own governor, the governor's own task force, issued ID task force report last year, and he had this to say: Oregon does not require people to prove legal presence as a part of the eligibility process. This has led to Oregon becoming a magnet for people here illegally, who find it increasingly difficult to obtain a driver's license.
Representative Gerard yields.
Thank you. The governor's own task force said that not requiring proof of legal presence has led to Oregon becoming a magnet for people here illegally who find it increasingly difficult to obtain a driver's license in other states. This increases the risk that DMV will issue driver's licenses and ID cards to people who aren't who they say they are, and that more fraudsters will come to Oregon from out of state. There's a number of incidents. Recently, in the Statesman Journal, they're talking about how Mexican drug lords are seizing control of routes used to smuggle migrants. It says Mexican drug lords are taking over the business of smuggling migrants into the United States, using them as human decoys to divert authorities from billions of dollars in cocaine shipments. Drug smugglers are shifting toward people and arms smuggling. When the new state law kicked in Utah a couple years ago, which stopped them from issuing state ID cards and driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants, they put out notices to all the people who had state ID cards to tell them they were expiring. Of the 74,000 notices sent out, 30,000 were returned to sender. A legislative audit found 95,000 undocumented people had either driver's licenses or ID cards. And in 2004, driver's licenses were issued to 62 different people who all lived in the same apartment in Salt Lake City. Now, I know, and I speak from experience, that Mormon families can be large, but I think that's a little too many people living in one apartment. Closer to home, and recently, in Hillsboro, a former DMV worker who ran a driving school faced nearly 200 criminal charges for helping illegal aliens get false addresses. Officials estimated he handled 80,000 driver's license applications between 2001 and 2003. And during opening arguments, the prosecutor pointed out Oregon is one of 20 states, and at that time, it's fewer now, that doesn't require legal residence to get a driver's license. You simply need to live in Oregon. Folks, this is a national security issue, and I think that this is a step in the right direction, and we do need to vote and support this particular bill. Thank you.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I have concerns with this extremely difficult situation of this huge unfunded federal mandate of the Real ID Act. There are no federal rules. The comment period just ended. There's a lot of uncertainty. How do we know what we need to do? I'm also extremely concerned about identity theft, as I know you are, and my constituents are, creation of an electronic database with Social Security numbers, birth certificates, other personal information concerns me greatly. My constituents are concerned about that, but my constituents are also concerned about the possibility that they may not be able to use their driver's license to enter a federal building or to board an airplane. And I share their concern. The carrier said that this is not an ideal situation. How true. And colleagues, don't think that this bill is the end. It's not the end. We cannot lose sight of the need for a workable, secure solution that we can afford for the very complex questions that were raised by the issues in this bill. I am very hesitantly supporting this bill on behalf of my constituents and their concerns, but it is not the end. We have a lot of work to do to resolve this issue. And again, as you'll see in the fiscal impact statement, there are no federal rules on the Real ID Act. We do not know what we need to do. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Today I rise and urge you to support House Bill 2827. As many of you have done over the past number of years, I've walked and talked to many of my constituents door to door and in gatherings around my area, and this issue has come up over and over again. I'm very frustrated with the federal government's inability to solve and to even work diligently on the problem of illegal immigrants. I am more frustrated that the cost is pushed on to the states to resolve the problem. However, that being said, this bill begins the process to clear up the fears that my constituents and yours do about illegal immigrants, how they're coming into our country and our state, getting Oregon driver's licenses and using that ID to illegally get jobs and state services they are not entitled to. I think Oregon taxpayers deserve to have the reassurance and accountability. That's what I am here for. That's what you're here for, too. And I urge your I vote on House Bill 2827A.
Representative Boquist.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, the carrier yields.
And just for the speaker's edification, I actually gave her a note earlier.
Everybody's been very polite.
My initial question is based on the LFO document, it says the language in the bill is permissive and does not compel ODOT to comply with the requirements of the Real ID Act. If the intent is to comply with the Real ID Act and the bill is permissive and doesn't make us comply with the Real ID Act, why didn't we make it firmer or more clear that we should comply?
Thank you for that question, good representative. The Department of Transportation has moved as far forward on implementing Real ID as they can without legislative authority, and they're just waiting out there for us to grant them that authority and hopefully the spending authority to move forward on implementation. And I have no doubts at all that that's their. We certainly have heard that over and over in this building, is that they're just waiting for us to tell them to move ahead. They keep calling this a policy decision.
Second question, Mr. Speaker.
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier does.
Further, LFO states that the bill does not explicitly grant ODOT the authority to require proof of legal presence. Proof of legal presence is part of the Real ID Act, so how will ODOT get the authority to require this? Will it have to come back to this chamber?
The proof of legal presence is federal law for Real ID, and to be compliant with Real ID, that is a piece that we have to do. And by telling ODOT that they need to become compliant with Real ID, that's the message that we're sending ODOT.
Thank you. Final question.
Additional question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Lastly, under LFO, it outlines the use of Social Security numbers as proof of legal presence. Are you required to be legally documented to get a Social Security number from the federal government?
Instead of just saying, I don't know, outside the scope of this bill, and I'm not that familiar with the intricacies of the federal Social Security law.
Okay. One final question, Mr. Speaker.
A final question. Do you yield?
Yes.
She does.
Lastly, under the bill, we're authorizing an exemption, or authorizing ODOT and the executive branch to file for an extension. What prevents the governor and ODOT from simply filing for an extension year in and year out and not implementing it at all?
Thank you for that question. The federal government has allowed an extension to the states to come into compliance, and without the federal government allowing us to do that, we just can't go out and ask for it anytime we want. It is going to be extremely difficult for the Department of Transportation even to meet the extension deadline with all the work that needs to be done. So at this point, we are definitely hoping to work towards that extension coming up.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, the questions are on the record and speak for themselves. I just want to make one comment. In going through all of the immigration, Real ID Act, and other bills, I've done a little bit of research in talking with Social Security Administration and federal officials, and I don't find any indication that you have to prove that you're legally in the United States to get a Social Security number. And in fact, activists for undocumented aliens or illegal aliens or whatever term you want to use have told me and others that at least 50% of those individuals have valid Social Security numbers. So I'm not sure that a Social Security number even answers the question. Thank you.
Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I believe the Real ID Act overextends the federal government's control over our state and the federal government's clutch on our lives. And I say to you here that I am unconvinced that a national ID card will stop terrorism. Now, if you want to do something about undocumented workers in this country, let's get to the reasons why people come to this country in the first place. And there's no doubt in my mind that a big reason has been the broken promises of NAFTA and other so-called free trade agreements. In fact, immigration has increased threefold since NAFTA was implemented in 1994. But trade is a discussion for another day. But today, I simply say to you, today, let's keep Big Brother off of our backs and out of our lives. And I say, let's not invite Big Brother in to work behind the counter of your local Oregon DMV. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry. Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
He does.
Carrier does.
Thank you, Representative. Representative, how many hearings did Congress have on this legislation?
To the good representative from Milwaukee and Southeast Portland, Congress didn't have any hearings on this piece of legislation. It was added to a bill in the dark of night. There were many discussions on this in the 911 Commission when they were doing their work, but as of Congress, there were none.
Further question to the carrier?
Additional question. Do you yield?
I do.
Carrier yields.
Thank you, Representative. How much money did the federal government give the states to implement this act?
To my knowledge, good Representative, the federal government did allow the states to use some of their Homeland Security funding to implement this. But I will tell you, the state of Oregon, there was no Homeland Security money left. So at this point in time, it's zero.
Further follow-up, please.
Follow-up question. Do you yield?
I do.
Carrier does.
So as a former city council member, as I recall, and as me as a former mayor, could we call this an unfunded mandate?
Yes, good representative. That would be the phrase I would use, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does carrier yield?
I do.
The carrier does yield.
And thank you. And this is simply because I wanted some clarification on one of your earlier responses, Representative. Did I understand you to say that driving privilege cards could still be issued to illegal immigrants? And would that be done by rule?
Thank you, good representative. I don't know that I said that. All this bill does is tell ODOT to go forth and implement Real ID. And part of that implementation is a Real ID valid driver's license. And you can't get a Real ID valid driver's license unless you prove legal presence.
One follow-up question.
Follow-up question. Does carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier does yield.
Thank you. However, is it not correct that under Real ID you can issue driving certificates?
Under Real ID, you are able to issue non-compliant ID and driver's licenses, but they are non-compliant and would not be valid for any federal purposes.
Thank you to the bill.
To the bill.
I just wanted to make it clear on the record that I hope that is not our intent to not be bringing the state of Oregon into compliance so that our citizens at a time in the future will not have the ability to board an airplane or to go into a federal building without a federal document. I would like to address just perhaps some of the discussion that I've heard here in regard to we don't even know what the rules are. Well, the rules that came out for consideration, for discussion from Department of Homeland Security have been out. There is a time frame for states to be able to work through the numerous issues that we all have in regard to Real ID, whether it's verification, the funding issue, which, by the way, there are Homeland Security grants yet available and being applied for, may be applied for by the states. Let's get the feds out of our lives. I think that we have to be real, true, and honest here in 2007 in the 21st century. And with regret for past actions and injustices, our world changed on 9/11. We have federal requirements for people to get their Medicaid, their food stamps. We have federal requirements for our banking standards for agricultural, food, and drug prevention. Environmental Policy Act. As a matter of fact, if we could cut some of those trees that Representative from Happy Valley talked about the other day, we could do some very significant things. We have federal contracting laws. We have gun laws. We have a whole bunch of things that states do need to comply with. And I'm not so sure that it's a valid argument to say that we do not need to bring ourselves into some level of compliance in this time. I am concerned also that we heard just last week that Real ID, contains onerous record verification and retention provisions, enormous burdens on citizens, that it exposes all Oregonians to unprecedented level of identity theft and increase the crime of identity theft, and that it would provide little security benefit, passed this House on a very divided vote. And by the way, it would appear then that today we are trying to have it both ways. I certainly hope that that rhetoric is not policy, not politics, trumping good public policy. And one last thing, Mr. Speaker, in regard to extracting this particular bill from committee, I hope that we do remember that we are setting the stage for the next time that there is a request to pull a bill from Ways and Means Committee without benefit of that discussion on the fiscal impacts, we should have no problem voting yes.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Needless to say, this is a unique debate in the way that the bill has come before this body and in what has been said by this body relating to it. And I have to say that I agree with many of the things that were stated by the good representative from District 33, my concerns over security and how 10 years ago there was discussion about a national ID card, which we vigorously opposed, and now we're going to have a state ID card that will be, according to the bill, coordinated with other information from other states, and if you put all the states together, now you have a national ID. But nevertheless, we're told we have to be very careful because if we don't have this, we can't go into a federal building or be able to get a ticket for a commercial airline. But if you actually look into it deeper, then there's also other things that this ID card is going to be very important for, because there's also discussion in Washington about not being able to buy ammunition if you don't have your federal ID card, because after all, the pesky terrorists can buy ammunition and they might be able to shoot somebody. But there's Second Amendment consequences with that as well, because although you can't control the carrying of guns, there's an issue about being able to put bullets in them. But nevertheless, this bill has a real problem that we must address, and that is the cost. The revenue statement that was passed out to all of us says that there is no revenue impact. And that's the big, large font notice. But on the last paragraph of the fiscal statement, it says ODOT estimates a decrease in revenue of $1.8 million in the 07-09 budget and $2.5 million in 09-11. That is a difference of opinion. We're told that Washington State has determined that it's going to cost $251 million to implement Real ID in Washington State, but they've got twice as many people as Oregon, so probably wouldn't cost us even half that. Well, no, we don't. We have a lesser estimate, because the Statesman Journal had an article on April 30th talking about Real ID, and ODOT, our own ODOT, said they estimate $65 million is the cost to implement Real ID. But we don't have to worry about that, because today we're not told that it's $65 million. We're told it's only, you know, $11, $12 million. But from where I come from, $11 to $12 million is a lot of money, too. And so where's that money going to come from? Well, we're not told where that money is going to come from. We do know that we can't afford $4 to $5 million for an additional 39 troopers, but we're going to deal with $11 or $12 million for a Real ID without identifying where the money's coming from. For all of these reasons, and especially the ones that we have fiscal problems that have not been identified, and we do not know where the money's coming from to fund this bill, this is a premature action, and so I'll be voting against it.
Representative Byer, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just very quickly, I thank you for the great debate today, colleagues, and I certainly appreciate all the heads up, everybody who had questions. Let me know that they had questions, and it's very much appreciated. Colleagues, I think this is a bill that we have to start moving forward on. ODOT is in a position, as I've said, that they can't move forward anymore until we give them the authority. The reason this bill has some permissive language telling them to move forward is partly because we don't have the final rules yet. We're really not sure what we're implementing. We do know that there is going to be a huge cost for this, which can be paid for out of ODOT funds. So I share a lot of the same concerns everybody in this body has about security issues, the funding issues. So I think that we're here to do a job for Oregonians, and this is one of the ways that we can protect their interests and allow them to be able to move freely in their travels. And I urge an aye vote and request a call of the House.
Representative Byer requests a call of the House. She is joined by Representative Cowan, Representative Buckley, Representative Tomei, Representative Barnhart, and Representative Berger. Doorkeepers bar the door. Sergeant-at-Arms attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Byer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Minnis Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Hannah, Minnis.
All members are present. Those of opinion that House Bill 2827A should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Buckley, how do you vote? Buckley votes no. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Barnhart votes no. Representative Holvey, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to change my vote from aye to nay.
Representative Holvey changes his vote from aye to nay. Representative Bonamici, for how do you vote? Representative Bonamici votes no. Representative Maurer votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Representative Flores votes aye. House Bill 2827A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Hannah, for what purpose do you rise? Colleagues, let's give our attention to Representative Hannah, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to request courtesies of the House and floor, please.
Representative Hannah asks to extend unanimous consent to extend courtesies of the House to...
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and former Representative Vicatia and Governor be granted privileges of the House and floor.
Representative Hannah asks unanimous consent to extend courtesies of the House and floor to former Governor Vicatia, and who is also a former representative, a member of this body. Welcome, Governor. The chair asks unanimous consent
The bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on Monday, June 4th. Third reading of Senate bills calendar. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House. Representative Richardson. Representative Richardson has filed a proposed amendment to House Rule 8.22, and it has been distributed to the members' desks. In compliance with House Rule 2.05, the clerk shall read the proposed amendment.
Proposed amendment to House Rules 8.22, limitation on committee amendments. Whenever a measure has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means Committee or Revenue Committee, neither of those committees shall propose to amend the measure in a manner that affects the substance with any other than a fiscal or revenue impact unless the chair of the House committee to which the initial referral was made consents to the amendments. Add, if consent is granted, a public hearing must be scheduled to allow for public input on the proposed amendments. In addition, the proposed amendment must be considered consistent with House Rule 5.35, submitted and signed by Representative Dennis Richardson.
The proposed amendment to House Rule 8.22 is referred to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules in compliance with House Rule 2.05. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Barnard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee on Revenue will meet promptly at 1:30.
Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee on Health Care has completed its work for the 74th Legislative Assembly and will meet only at the call of the chair.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Representative Hunt.
Democrats will caucus in 5 minutes.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Speaker. Your Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources has completed its work for the 74th Legislative Assembly and will meet only at the call of the chair.
That's excellent news. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee on Consumer Protection has completed its work for the 74th Legislative Assembly and will meet only at the call of the chair. And I want to publicly thank the members of my committee who did a great job on some real tough issues, bringing a lot of great passion and really did a great job. I really thank them.
Thank you, Representative Holvey. Representative McPherson.
Speaker, your Committee on the Judiciary has completed its work for the 74th Legislative Assembly and will meet only at the call of the chair. And not to be outdone by the immediate past speaker, I want to thank my committee for their 5-day-a-week, 8 a.m. duty this session. It was hard duty, but they did a great job, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative McPherson. Are there further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Speaker, the proposed amendment that is now going to the Rules Committee is an important amendment to respond to what took place in the Natural Resource Subcommittee for Ways and Means earlier this week when House Bill 3540, which is the Measure 37 fix bill, was amended with 11 pages of complex amendments by a Ways and Means Subcommittee without hearings, without public testimony, without the ability for the public to know what would be the consequences of these amendments. And therefore, it is appropriate and timely for us to amend our House rules in a way that will assure that when there's going to be bills sent to Ways and Means that are not relating to fiscal issues, and there's going to be amendments placed in those bills, that there should be an opportunity for a public hearing on those amendments. Thank you.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm pleased to alert you to some improved desk adornments that I'm confident that the good representative from District 57, the land of food and shelter, will enjoy next week. Tomorrow, 10 a.m., Volcano Stadium, the Newport Cubs and the LeGrand Tigers will vie for the state 4A baseball championships. I have this adorable cub that's looking forward to gracing the Honorable Representative Greg Smith's desk on Monday morning to announce the Newport Cub victory.
Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I've never been so impugned in my life. This Saturday, history is in the making. The mighty LeGrand Tigers are going to take on the mighty Newport Cubs. Now, I have to share with you, colleagues, just very, very quickly, we would be a little nervous from Eastern Oregon knowing that we're taking on a coastal team. However, we've already dominated several coastal teams in beating a team from Astoria with the good representative from the upper left coast. So this Saturday, we hope all of you will come out and watch a fabulous baseball game. And on Monday, look forward to watching the good representative from the Central Coast wear a baseball jersey of the LeGrand Tigers. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances?
Adjournment, Representative Jensen, 9 a.m. Monday, June 4th, 2007.
Mr. Speaker, move we adjourn until 9 a.m. Monday, June 4, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 9 a.m. Monday, June 4, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.